You're listening to a 4x4 Radio Network podcast.
This is a special edition of the Sinister Podcast, New Defender in the Metal. Brian Joslin, publisher of Alloy and Grit, tells us all about the New Defender making its debut today at the Frankfurt Auto Show. Thanks to our sponsor, Commonwealth Classics. Commonwealth Classics is a direct importer of classic vehicles from Europe and South America and has a rotating collection of rare and unique Land Rovers. Their showroom is located in Virginia, just 45 minutes from Washington, D.C. Visit cwclassics.com to view their current inventory of classic vehicles. Land Rover invited Brian to Sully Hall in July for a preview of the New Defender. Brian gives us his first-hand account of what he saw and heard. There were three things that caught my attention. The size of the New Defender, Land Rover heard and listened to the community's comments about the DC-100, and Nick Rogers is the designer of record. I'll let you discover the fourth item that caught my attention. I will say, though, it is a design element. A special thank you to Brian and Alloy and Grit for sharing this unique opportunity with our listeners and the entire Land Rover community. There will be a full write-up of the New Defender in the next edition of Alloy and Grit. Alloy and Grit is offering podcast listeners 20% off any subscription through September 30th, 2019. Use podcast 20, that's podcast and the number 20, at checkout. Visit alloyandgrit.com and is spelled out.
The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners.
This is a special Center Steer show. This is the New Defender release. Brian Joslin of Alloy and Grit magazine was invited to Sully Hall back in, I think it was July. He's going to share with us now what Land Rover shared with him about the New Defender. As it is being released today, we can now talk about it. Brian, do you like what you saw?
Absolutely. I was, like everyone else, I've been watching the low reveals up until that visit. I did not have any more information than anyone else did in terms of the final appearance, so I was excited to see it in the metal for the first time. Was really impressed with what I saw after all these years.
So the anticipation was worth it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think a lot of people are really going to be surprised when they see it, especially in person. I mean, by now, so many pictures have leaked out that it's essentially been revealed in small details. I think until they get up next to it and see it in person with other vehicles around it in a more natural setting, they're really not going to grasp the full scope of the design and how far it's come from the DC-100. Was it 8 years ago at this point?
Has it been that long?
It has.
Jeez. So they invited you, I assume other journalists, to Sully Hall, and what was that like? I'm sure. Looking for inside information because I think it's kind of cool. You got invited to see this preview.
Well, it was a surprise invitation. Done a couple of these in the past, and it's always an honor to get one of these because there's generally only a handful of us that get to go on these. It's a trusted relationship, clearly. So it was basically a chance to use a Defender in the design studio and talk with the design staff and the development staff in advance of the official unveiling, which is happening presumably today when this releases. It was a surprise for me and something I didn't take lightly. It's also a bit of a curse because, we've been under embargo. We weren't allowed to really talk about our visit or the fact that we were even there until today. So, yeah, it was it's a blessing and a curse. It was great to see it in advance. It was tough not to be able to share everything until now. Yeah, we should be fair with the readers. We're recording this slightly in advance of the official reveal at the show. Material obviously won't be available until it makes its debut in Frankfurt.
And how many other journalists were there? Was it a large gathering? How close did you get to see it?
Five of us. Yeah, there were five of us all together. Okay. I think all American journalists, or North American journalists, I should say.
So they probably had other groups of journalists then come in from different parts of the world, then, I assume.
Presumably, yes. Yeah. I know shortly after we were there, some of the UK journalists actually got to drive some of the prototypes. We did not get to drive. Yeah, they were bringing other waves of journalists in from other countries, in small trusted groups like that. We were supposedly the first group, as I was told. They were preparing some of their presentation material and had to ask for backup questions of themselves a little bit. So it was a good time putting them on the spot.
And I assume this was no cameras, no cell phones.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, they, they gave us a presentation in a fairly darkly lit room. There was very little lighting, pencil and paper. We were allowed to use phones for recording, but the acoustics were bad, and I chose to take my own notes. Yeah, no recording. No, there was not even a. I guess there was a staff photographer there to record that, but yeah, we were not allowed any opportunities to leak out information. We weren't given any printed materials afterwards. It was all from whatever notes and conversations we could glean.
Did you get up close, or was this just a presentation?
I sat in them.
Oh, you actually got to sit in. Oh, sweet, sweet. And before we get to that, who did the presentation? Was this just one JLR person? Was Mr. McGovern there?
Yeah, so Jerry McGovern did the introduction and you know, walked through the kind of the design notes and the overall brief of the project, which, you know, we've all beat to death at this point. You know, he mentioned the start of the new generation with the DC-100 concept and, you know, moved on to, you know, how they've evolved it based on the feedback they received. I can say I believe they took wholeheartedly all the feedback that they got from DC-100 and really internalized that and went back to the drawing board. I don't think they took that lightly. It was more than just the front end treatment that, you know, didn't necessarily resonate with people. I think they got a better sense of what the Defender meant to Land Rover enthusiasts as a result of kind of shocking us all with the DC-100. Having said that, I think they would have gone to production with the DC-100 if people hadn't put up such a fight.
So I guess they do, in fact, listen to their customers and the heritage customers, I guess, because that seemed to be the folks that...
Yeah.
Had the most.
And we get into some of the options and packages they put together. It's pretty clear they have a sense of how people use their Defenders. Excited to share some of that with you as well. Yeah. So from Jerry, it moved on to a couple of the development people and, you know, who talked on more of the technical notes. And then we got to meet one-on-one with other team members, you know, Amy Frisella, the interior designer, and some of the other program people that were responsible for drivetrain and so on.
How long did it last?
It was maybe an hour and a half.
Okay.
And not as long as we would have liked.
Sure. You got to sit in it, but you did not get to drive it.
No, this was strictly in the design studio. We did get to see it in motion. They have an outside viewing area, basically a gallery. We stood inside the building and watched a couple of them move around to get a sense of kinetic design and what it's going to look like moving down the road.
Right. And
that was actually, we saw that before we saw them static inside the studio. So it was actually very exciting. It looks very good in motion. It's got a very kind of commanding road presence. You know, the tires are pushed out wide and it's got short overhang, so it's really exciting to see it in motion. So yeah, we got a couple minutes of watching them do figure eights in the design courtyard, and then we got to go inside and see three prototypes. They were pre-production prototypes. All of the stuff was pre-production. You know, I tried to look under one of them, and it was pretty obvious it was probably still on a buck of some sort. It wasn't there was no engine in the one that we were looking at, and so on. But the surfaces were all real. The finishes were all real.
Yeah, was it in camo, or was this actual legit colors?
No, there was no camo. This was all bare paint.
Okay, good.
No more camo.
Good. That's because, you know, almost every photo we've seen, you know, so far, the official ones anyways, have all been in that development camo. So
I was able to look through that. I spent a lot of time with the high-res photos looking at shut lines and, you know, and came up with my own kind of rendering that was fairly close. You know, some of the details obviously were off, and they were really good about keeping, especially the front end, really well disguised, because that was a big mystery, was how bad was the face going to look. They got that wrong. Was as relieved as anyone else to finally see it with no black and white zebra stripes on it.
So there was a photo released that back in, what was that, April, I believe, April or May, folks may recall, it was not in development camo. It looked like the UE kind of light and green, and there was an engine may or may not have been there, but it was covered up, and that photo was released. Was that something similar to what maybe you saw? Do you think that was an unofficial leaked photo?
Yeah, so there was I think if you're talking about the one, it was kind of a sand beige color. It was indoor shot you're talking about?
Well, I thought the body was green, and then the engine bay was covered with a cloth of some sort, and then the hood was open.
There was one that was beige.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're talking about,
I believe he's referencing.
That was in a paint booth. That was definitely an internal leak. That had happened maybe a week or two before we were there, and they were rather upset that they got out. Obviously, it took a lot of wind out of their sails. That was, I believe, one of the vehicles that I saw on display that day. It had the hood off and engine presumably covered. I'm assuming that's what was in there. But yeah, that was the real deal. More recently, the James Bond movie set picture, definitely one of the real vehicles.
That photo that was released from the Bond set then. So does that mean that do we think that the new Defender will be in the new Bond film?
I've been predicting that for probably the last year and a half, 2 years.
I had a feeling
the timing would coincide with that.
Yeah, because the Bond films.
My daughter happens to be a big James Bond fan, and she knows all about what's happening with the production of that movie. I just kept listening to her tell me about updates on timing. It just seemed to sync really well with what was happening with the Defender. So I had a sneaking suspicion it would end up as probably the anti-hero car, the villain car, but I guess we'll have to see.
It does make sense considering they use a Series 3 supposedly in the beginning of the movie.
I think that's probably Bond's retirement car as he's retired in Bermuda, wherever that is. Yeah, exactly.
We'll see, I guess, when that comes out. I think it's February timing, which I think coincides pretty well with the initial launch of the Defenders.
Interesting. Okay, so let's go back to you're in Sully Hall, you're at the factory, you're getting to see this new one. So tell us about it. What's the size, dimensions? What can you tell us that they told you?
Sure. So I've got some rough notes here. Like I said, I scribbled them in the dark on paper and had to decipher them later. But I wanted to share a couple of the kind of opening remarks that'll probably either make some people turn off right now and say the hell with it, and may intrigue others, I guess. Jerry's been very controversial throughout his tenure, and there's not been a lot of faith in him in leading the Defender design from enthusiasts. But he made a bold statement right from the beginning and said that, you know, at this point, Land Rover has fully transitioned into a purveyor of luxury SUVs. That is a positioning statement for the brand. Keeping that in mind, it's not the farmer's friend. They're really not looking at the agricultural, you know, market in the way that Land Rover has its roots. They wanted to set the stage, I think, you know, be prepared. This is not your farmer's market kind of car.
Not a Chelsea tractor anymore?
No. Having said that, he said that the Defender was designed with an eye on a more urbanized future, which is just a fact of life. You know, more and more people live in urbanized areas, if not, you know, the city themselves, and with the realities of both future and current legislation in mind. So they're looking at this as a long-term platform, not just another five-year model and then we'll rehack it. Their goals were for it to be commanding, fit for purpose, tough and durable, and with the potential to be an icon for future generations. They're forward-looking. They recognize that the people that have loved their series trucks and the Defenders to this point may not fall in love with this one. It's a different generation. It's a different architecture. Everything's different about this. But it's meant to carry on that spirit for future generations. Don't have that connection to the older vehicles. And I can honestly say I kind of relate to this in a way because I grew up as a Volkswagen enthusiast. But not an air-cooled Volkswagen enthusiast. I had GTIs. And when we would go to friends that also had GTIs, we would go to local car shows and, you know, be kicked to the corner with those water-cooled things that weren't real Volkswagens. And, you know, we just loved them for what they were. I've never owned an air-cooled VW, but I've had 7 Golf, you know, over 7 consecutive ones when I was much younger. I can relate to that same kind of mindset. Look, we're not going backwards. This is the future. And, you know, for those people that love their air-cooled Beetle, they'll always be there. For people that have a different interpretation of the brand, contemporary contact, we offer a whole line of cars that have some of the same values and a different shape. I think that was kind of the same sentiment there. You know, we're looking at future generations icons. We're not replicating the past. You can't replicate the past.
I like the use of the word icon. I do like
that. Yeah. And he kind of finished with, we want to recognize the past, but very quickly forget it. So that's probably where you lost maybe a third of your listeners right now. But they come at it with the understanding that the original Defender is just impossible to replicate in a modern context. They didn't try to do that. They tried to make the best Defender they could, you know, with the realities of modern production, shared platform, shared architecture, and future wants and needs. Having said that, I guess we'll start at the outside because that's obviously what everyone has seen, you know, up to this point. First of all, it's much bigger in person than the pictures even begin to show. I laugh, you know, I've seen so many Kia Soul, Honda Element kind of comments over the last few months. And, you know, when the thing is seen in isolation, I can almost understand that, you know, given some of the rounded corners and things. But it's as big as an LR4 in person. It's tall. A Kia Soul is going to look like a 3/4 scale Defender next to a Defender. It's a big vehicle, not wide, tall, and it has a, you know, an imposing kind of street stance, I guess, you know, with the tires out near the corners. And it's just it has a very vertical kind of appearance. Definitely does not carry over from the Range Rovers and the Discovery at the moment.
I will say, based on what we've seen from we'll call the James Bond photo, it does not look like a rebadged current other model new Land Rover, which I think is a nice thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I would say it doesn't really even resemble an LR3 or LR4.
No.
When you're next to it, the overall form, you know, in a general sense, perhaps, but the details are entirely Defender. It doesn't, there's not a shared panel on it with an LR3 or LR4. It's its own vehicle.
What about the windshield and the windscreen? Is old Defender, if you want to call it that, you know, fairly straight up and down? Is that, it's tough to tell in the one photo that we've so far seen of the James Bond set.
So yeah, it's not vertical and it's not flat.
Right.
It's a contemporary windshield. It does have, looking back at it now, I don't recall if it had as much rake as a, you know, a Defender or Discovery. It would appear to have a more vertical windscreen than those other models that are on the same architecture. Could be wrong about that.
It looks like that from the James Bond photo. It looks like it's not rakish.
Yeah. And I recall from sitting in it that it did not feel like as swept back as the last Defender I was in, or last Discovery that I was in, rather. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, verticality is an element of the design throughout. So I think they've tried to retain as much as they could while still meeting aero requirements and other things that the old Defender never had to worry about. Up front, we'll just start at the face then, because that's obviously the thing most people haven't seen yet. So the round lights have a kind of an interesting detail that really doesn't show well in pictures, especially on the black on black. And that's the semi-round elements are actually recessed. It's not a flush lens sitting out with the bumper line. It actually sits back. If you can imagine, you know, Ford or Mustang, Camaro or Mustang kind of treatment, where the round light sits behind a, you know, a forward element.
So I'm guessing that light covers are now included as an optional extra, right, for the off-road edition. They can bolt nicely right in that recessed area.
Yeah, somebody will probably come up with those. Wouldn't be a bad idea. The hood sits inset, and what people won't be able to tell, you know, just from the pictures up to this point, is that a little bit of diamond plate that's appears to be on the fenders is actually part of the opening hood element. It's a plastic applique, unfortunately. I think the aftermarket will jump on that right away with at least a real diamond plate, you know, material, aluminum. Unfortunately, there's no structure under there. They said it's strictly cosmetic. It's kind of one of the things they seem to regret not being able to do is make that a standing point. But they wanted to pay homage to the diamond plate tradition. So they incorporated that in there. Kind of give the impression that the hood was a little more conventional, you know, to the Defender. It gives a kind of a break there.
So may I ask, so you're saying that the checkered diamond plate area, that is part of the hood or not?
It is part of the hood. It opens when the hood is open.
Because it would kind of be cool if it wasn't. And then it's that homage to sitting, you know, everybody kind of likes to pop up the hood, the bonnet, and then sit and, you know, sit down and lean on the wing and put your coffee, your tea down and look at the engine. That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah. I suppose there's aftermarket potential for three-piece hood design or a redesigned hood that leaves flanks off to the side.
But there's probably
under there. They didn't let us open the hood, so I have no idea what's beneath that.
I'm sure that space is used for something.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, of course it is.
The bodywork is interesting. This is one major break from Defender tradition. Most of the exterior body panels are actually steel. It does have an aluminum monocoque based on the D7 architecture, Discovery, and current, all the current front engine rear configurations. But in order to get the shut lines and those creases and the body shape the way they needed it, they had to go to steel for the door skins and the front fenders. The rest of the body structure is all aluminum, but they couldn't make that happen in aluminum.
Is there anything aluminum on the outside? Maybe the roof?
Yeah, so the roof, the hood, the rear quarter panels, the rear cargo door, I believe. I'd have to double check that. They were a little uncertain themselves on which panels that folks I talked to in design were a little uncertain what the final finish or final material was on that. The rear door is built for hanging on. The rear tire sits out there. It's got a super beefy, looks like it was a die-cast spare tire carrier. It's nothing like the old Discovery spare tire carrier.
It's hinged to the side. Is that correct? The rear door?
It is hinged to the side. Yeah, it swings just like all the old ones do.
Is it reversible?
Hinges on the right. No, it does not appear to be reversible, so it'll continue to frustrate people who park on the right side curb.
It's the North American folks will be like, hey, excuse me, hold on.
They're retaining a little bit of British charm, I guess. One of the other interesting elements they kept in is collar below the greenhouse, and this is something that didn't really show well, certainly in the camouflage intentionally, didn't really show well on the black and black pictures either. So the, you know, below the greenhouse, there's a maybe an inch and a half edge that runs under that vertically, kind of keep that collar where the before the body rolls down into the shoulder. So that's obviously a very distinct Defender series kind of trait.
Do the windows roll all the way down, all four of them?
The rear ones roll most of the way down.
Okay. I want to put my arm out there while you're driving.
Yeah. Yeah, those aren't going to go all the way down, I don't think. The front ones definitely do. Yeah, and so that collar around the greenhouse carries under the windshield as well. And in that spy picture that...
Oh, I remember that, yes.
...at the paint shop. I wasn't sure that was actually a real picture based on that, but the firewall is body-colored on most models, carries right down in, and that was kind of a design tribute to the traditional bulkhead.
Well, that's, I guess, where the scuttle vents would have been, so that at least that's where right. I saw it. It's kind of like that homage that had that, whatever you're calling it, that belt line, I guess, something there.
Yeah.
But that you're saying that extends all the way around the vehicle now?
Yeah, so from the, all the way around, it's not technically on the rear door, on the cargo door, but down the sides and around the... under the windshield.
You know, I'm looking at my 110 just out the window here from the studio, and I see that now, that belt line. I never really noticed it until now we see that, and I see that where it rolls up, and then there's got to be, what, about 4 or 5, maybe 6 inches of this belt line. It makes, okay, very nice. That looks good. It looks good. I like that.
Yeah. One of the things that hadn't really been shown until the reveal, certainly it was well camouflaged in all the, you know, the mule pictures, and everyone's so focused on the front end that we never really got to see the back end. The taillight treatment was really unique. So the rear pillar, as it comes down, carries a black treatment all the way down. Kind of hard to describe over the phone. It's got a three semi-rectangular lamp array on each side. They call them squircles, square circles. So the they've got kind of an individual element to them within this panel. And then out to the side of them are two little square elements. By the time this is aired, it'll be obvious to everyone what we're talking about. It's a really hard thing to describe. Right. But there is no wraparound taillight with wings on it like the DC-100. They managed to kill that. I've never been a fan of the winglets that come up into the fender. The rear end graphic is essentially flat. It doesn't wrap around. There's no taillight that wraps around the side of the body. It was a really strong carryover of the Defender.
So this look. These lights, so I take it there's the turn indicator, a brake light, and then separate running lights or parking lights, as we would typically call them here in the U.S.?
Yeah, I didn't get a really, they had parking lights on the vehicle, so it was really hard to get a sense of what they all did, but I, presumably rear fog light, brake light,
turn rear signal. Fog, right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm assuming one of those is probably a reverse light element as well.
Makes sense. And we're assuming all LED, of course.
Yeah. Everything's LED.
I figured. Yeah. And even the headlights are LED?
Headlights are LED all the way. Yep.
Does hearing about the new Defender make you yearn for the original Defender? That series truck with a metal dash or a classic two-door Range Rover? Commonwealth Classics is a direct importer of classic cars and trucks from Europe and South America. They're a registered Virginia dealership with a physical showroom just 45 minutes west of Washington, D.C. They specialize in importing and restoring vehicles not originally sold in the United States, including two-door Range Rover Classics, TDI Powered Discoveries, or Defenders, and metal dash series trucks. Their vehicles are imported, titled, and available to you to test drive before you buy at their showroom in Marshall, Virginia. Looking for something special? They can help source, restore, and import that special truck you've been looking for. Contact Commonwealth Classics for your next classic vehicle. Commonwealth Classics at www.cwclassics.com.
we talked about this when you let me know that you had done this, and I knew nothing ahead of time, by the way. When Brian called me and said, I just came back from the UK, he said, I can't tell you anything, and I was nice enough not to ask. So, and even if I had, you wouldn't have said anything. At the time, there was this photo release, I think it was one of the Tusk ones, and there was, at the rear windows past the second doors, there was this like white panel, and it covered the yeah. rear windows. What's going on there? You said that was something interesting.
Yeah, so that's a... I don't have a name written down for it. I'm not sure what they're going to call it, but it's basically just a body colored panel that sits on the rear glass. All the rear glass is flush on these vehicles, except for door glass, I should say. But the rear quarter glass is all flush, and these little accent panels sit on the surface. They're body colored. They are optional for one thing, so you're not required to take it. But the mounting positions for that also double as accessory mounting pads for a host of accessories that they've designed. So side ladder, they've got an outside pannier set that can mount these structures. So the squares are there as kind of a dressing for the mounting points. For hardware beneath it,
like bicycles or kayaks, or it seems
presumably
it seems odd on the side. Like,
yeah, so they do have the roof ladder that they've designed. For instance, is a folding side mount roof ladder that would go on our driver's side. You know, it's approved as a road legal ladder, mounts to to that position that we were just talking about, and folds into like a Z fold, I guess you'd say, three sections kind of fold into each other and secure to the side of the vehicle on our driver's side. One of the other ones we had there had side panniers, carrying cases for the outside, and they had that mounted on the right side of the vehicle. And the idea was maybe a wetsuit if you're a surfer, or dog gear if you're a dog person, any kind of thing that you really wouldn't want to keep inside the car, keep outside in this secure storage bin, this pod. And so those little squares that are body colored just cover those mounting positions when they're not being used for hardware.
Is there a roof rack, or is this replacing a roof rack?
No, there's roof rack options. They're trying to remember now. They had a flat rack on there, kind of a kind of like a Rhino rack kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Did not see any branding. I'm pretty sure somebody's making it for them, but these were all factory accessories that had a factory rail mounting system. And I apologize, I don't remember many of the details about the rails. I can tell you that it's fairly heavy duty, though. Look at my notes here. The factory roof rack and mounting system will support 370 pounds dynamic. So moving, it'll hold that. And in static position, so parked for camping or whatever, it'll support 660 pounds. So, your rooftop tents and things like that, a couple people on the roof.
RTT.
Shouldn't be a problem. Yep.
That's interesting. Oh, cool. At least yep. they prepared for it. They have.
They acknowledge that, people want to accessorize their vehicles, and they're going to offer a ton of stuff at the dealer. But the fact that they're doing that just opens the door for the aftermarket to come in and make options.
I heard it from the Bond release photo that some folks thought they saw Alpine windows. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's Alpine glass in the 90 and the 110 models. So they more of an oval structure, like a traditional shape, fairly large opening. It does sit like it would in a Discovery. It does not sit over the second row directly for crash safety reasons. I presume they've got rollover architecture in the roof that would prevent that, from being in that position.
So it's over the cargo area.
Yeah. Alpine windows over the cargo area.
Yep. Okay. All right, is it smoke glass? At least because the Bond film or the Bond photo is all black, and it's tough for me to see it, but I'm guessing it's smoked or body colored.
Yeah, the ones we saw were all smoke. One of the vehicles we saw, I believe, didn't even have real glass. I think it was painted. It's hard to, these were prototypes, and
sure.
It's hard to know for sure whether they'll have like a clear glass option. I imagine we're probably going to get all tinted rear, for privacy and security reasons. Yeah, everything we saw was dark in the rear.
What about on the roof? Is there sunroofs or panel roofs?
Yeah, so the roof configuration, everything we saw had a moving, tilt and slide glass sunroof over the front portion. There's a sunroof over the second row and then a fixed roof over the rear cargo area. I'm trying to remember now.
Was that was that a glass or plexiglass, or was it?
It was all glass.
All glass. Wow.
So there will be utility versions in other markets. We're not going to see a utility version. So they will be building it without a glass sunroof. Whether any of the American vehicles ever make it here without a glass sunroof remains to be seen, and is probably more of a dealer decision. Yeah, I think most of what we're going to get is going to be with the sunroof configuration, probably like you'd see in a Discovery, with a a large panoramic roof in the center, tilt and slides back over the glass roof, low profile to keep it below a rack. One interesting feature that hadn't been leaked out was the option of a sliding cloth roof in place of the glass panel.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah, so it's a kind of a semi-soft top for now, but it would retract over the rearward portion of the roof and be a fully automated cloth panel, and would supposedly allow standing availability from the second row. So your observation deck from the second row.
Ooh. Now, would that be, that could be interesting in a 90 version.
Yeah,
actually kind of cool.
So interestingly, they're going to debut that in the 90, and it'll become available later after launch in the 110 as well.
Still on the outside of the vehicle, the Bond one had a integral winch in the front. Can you tell us more about that? And is that across the line, or is that a special edition?
My understanding is that will be, it does exist. It is for real. they've developed it with Warn winch. The way I understand it for the U.S. is it will be available either as a port installed option or a dealer installed option. And that there will also be availability for just a winch tray if you want to fit your own winch later. So you can order it with a winch tray and no winch if you're not mentioned you're going to use it, or you want your own winch option. Along those lines, it was also mentioned that the vehicle would be pre-configured for some additional electrical accessories. I did not see rows of auxiliary switches, but presumably that's what they had in mind.
Like an auger? So I had to get that in.
Yeah, maybe. Certainly lighting and winch accessories and other popular off-road gear that requires electricity. You know, with this thing being on a CAN bus system, they don't want everyone tapping in to try to add electrical accessories. They know people are going to do it, so they've made some accommodation for that, apparently.
Wow, that's nice.
I don't have further details at this point. They were they mentioned it in passing and didn't really have a lot of details or weren't sharing it. So there will be winch availability, and that's a front winch. There's not a rear winch, as they showed in the Discovery SVX. I can talk a little bit about the architecture, since we're talking, recovery and stuff. I mentioned it was built on the D7 architecture, the same basic architecture as everything else.
Is that the MLA platform, I think?
They refer to it as D7X, but it's the Discovery Range Rover Sport Range Rover. Having said that, 95% of it's new. It's not shared 100% with any of those vehicles. So it is probably share some floor panels and maybe a firewall or something. This is a controversial move, obviously, moving from body on frame. But they assured us that the body structure is 10 times stiffer than the old Defender's body on frame. They benchmarked it against other off-road vehicles, and it's 3 times stiffer than the best body on frame vehicle that they compared it to. They wouldn't say what that was, but presumably it's something heavy duty and maybe German.
Maybe, could be true.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The aluminum unibody shouldn't be too much of a concern for most people. The vehicle has a 16-ton recovery load, so you can put a lot of stress into that chassis, pulling and recovery. Built for 7 tons of vertical wheel load, so it'll take a good bounce.
Damn.
Yeah. Like the others, it'll have about a 7,400-pound towing capacity, so it's built to tow. All the way around, it's a pretty stout vehicle. There's factory recovery points front and rear. They're missing from the Bond pictures, but they've got factory recovery points with what look to be open hooks. They might have been D-hook, not swiveling mounts, but they definitely have some hard architecture there for solid vehicle recovery on both left and right side of the vehicle, front and rear.
What's its clearance?
It will be available with coil springs as standard. Air suspension will be optional, but probably 90% or better of what we see will probably be air suspension. Stats are for the air suspension because this is at full off-road height. 38-degree approach angle, which is about what we estimate. I think we estimated a 40-degree approach angle when we saw the first prototype pictures. It's right in there. A 40-degree departure angle. Got 11.5 inches of ground clearance in off-road mode, probably 8.5 or so in standard mode. suspension. The air suspension actually has quite a bit more travel than we would have assumed. In the rear, it's got up to 12.4 inches of travel. And up front, a little more limited with the steering architecture, but still has 10.5 inches of front suspension travel.
Where'd they put the air pump?
That's a good question.
Because I know, didn't the Rangies have a problem with the air pumps being, I think, with the spare in the back?
Yeah, I'm not sure where they've integrated it. Maybe off to the side, because, you know, this doesn't have a spare tire well. It's got a flat floor, so it probably is off to one of the rear quarter panels, you know, inside the vehicle.
Are you able to use that air pump for other things?
Yeah, so one of the options you're going to have is actually a usable onboard. It has the compressor already, but it'll have an air tank for inflating tires or for inflating recreational products or whatever.
Beach balls, yeah.
Beach balls and floaties and whatever. They didn't talk about the capacity. It'll be integral into the side, one of the side rear panels, depending on the option configuration. It'll be part of some of the packages they offer as well, which I'll have more details on by the time this actually goes live. The air compressor will double as a utility beyond the air suspension as well. So that's one of those things that clearly they've looked at how people actually use their, whether it's the compressor for the air lockers or converting air suspension to work for accessories.
And it's been revealed that it'll have three air lockers. Is that correct?
It'll have two. It'll have a center locker and a rear locker. Front will not lock, at least from the factory, presumably the drivetrain configuration with the front differentials. But it will come standard with definitely a center lock. I think the rear diff lock is part of a more heavy-duty package. That was a little cloudy as well on our specific configuration. Mm-hmm. Two-speed transfer case, you know, is standard, so it'll have a high-low. All the transmissions are going to be 9-speed automatic. You know, there will be no, anywhere in the world, as I understand, there will be no manual transmission in your Defender. Everything's connected to the CF architecture. We're going to get two versions of the engine, at least at launch. We're going to get the 2-liter, 300 horsepower, four-cylinder, the Ingenium that's in the other product. And then the top engine, at least at launch, will be the P400, which is the six-cylinder Ingenium with a mild hybrid boost. So that'll be the 300 horsepower or 400 horsepower option out of the 3-liter.
Is that gas or diesel?
These are both gas engines. They were not committing to diesel during our presentation. They mentioned the diesel engines that will be available in the European market. One of them was a 200 horsepower four-cylinder, and I think the other was kind of the basic six-cylinder diesel, the V6. Oh, that's right. Yeah, so there will be a 240 horsepower gas engine for Europe, basically the, you know, the standard Ingenium engine, 200 horsepower diesel. No big diesels are in the cards at the moment, but that's all subject to change, and they may not have shared that with us anyway. So
the U.S. is going to get the option of either just a simple gasoline engine or a mild hybrid, which is gasoline and a battery.
48-volt electric battery boost. Same engine that's now in the Range Rover Sport with the P400 package.
Did they talk about miles per gallon or range?
They did not talk fuel economy at this point because I think all that's still being certified. You know, given the weight of the vehicle and drivetrains, it'll probably be similar to a Discovery. Upper teens, low 20s, mid-20s.
Pretty much like my current Defender. I think about 2022.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I'm sure there's more efficient powertrains that will eventually debut, but they were really interested in talking about what's going to happen at launch for now.
Right. And I guess the all-electric is pushed out for a couple of years.
Yeah. You know, they're working out their full electric drivetrains right now.
Yeah. And of course, they partner with BMW, it seems, to get some assistance.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about the interior, and actually that was one of the things that impressed me the most when I saw it. You know, we only see these things going down the road in spy pictures. We don't get an inside view from those.
Well, there was one spy photo that had the interior that showed a four-spoke steering wheel and showed the outline of the vehicle on the dash in the center and the display.
Correct.
Is any of that accurate?
It is. So a lot of that dashboard was actually covered in drape, though. What you didn't really see is that they carried over kind of a Series Defender open dash kind of concept to that center. That's actually a magnesium cross member that runs the width of the vehicle. It's a structural cross member. The 10-inch display sits within that, but there's also just open storage space like you'd have in some of the older models, especially in front of the passenger. They've done a nice job with kind of carrying over that industrial, very functional, kind of basic, you know, minimal finish. It's made of magnesium. They finish it either in natural silver powder coat just for protection, magnesium from oxidizing, presumably.
So we're back to a metal dash is what you're saying. Back to Series 2 days.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, we're back to metal dash. High-tech metal.
Wow.
They'll also offer that in white or black powder coat, depending on the packaging. So there'll be some kind of vintage color combinations you'll be able to do inside with more white finishes. And otherwise, it's the natural metal finish. It's powder coat.
So to be clear, it's exposed metal.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. It's unupholstered. It's unplasticized. It just has a powder coat on it.
Is that across the whole line, or is there a version that will have the traditional kind of looking modern dash?
So it's got a modern dash top. It's got a black plastic pad or whatever across the top, but the that center rail is open. And, you know, there's glove box beneath it and console and all the other things that you'd expect in a modern vehicle, but
the
main graphic there is open. It's a really cool feature. The door panels are not just body colored, but they're body-colored steel. The full body panel is painted inside and out. Your exterior color shows on the inside. Access to the window regulators and electronics and all the things that go inside a modern door are accessible through panels that sit on top of that surface, and they're held in place with Torx bolts. No plastic clips. It's all floating panel that bolts into the door. Actually looks really nice. Nice to see a little bit of body color in there.
So the interior dash then also has, I think, two display screens, one for the driver and then one in the center. Does that control everything, or are there accessory or extra knobs?
No, there's a handful of knobs, but a lot of it's touchscreen. You know, the instruments are all multi-configuration, I'm assuming TFT or LCD screens. And then the 10-inch display in the center is your navigation and climate, you know, some of your routine kind of controls. There is the little, I don't even know how to describe the thing. There's a presentation of your shift controls and terrain response and all that. That's that little... the little shift knob tray, I guess you would say, that comes off of that. Everything being manual or automatic transmission and, you know, electronic switches. There's no mechanical linkage between that. It's all done with switches.
Right.
They can make that really compact. And what that allows, obviously, is three across seating. You know, you can have a...
there's no tunnel?
There's no tunnel. It's flat floor, almost entirely flat. I think there was a mild ridge in the center. But,
so where's the shifter then? Or is there a shifter?
It's up on the dashboard. On the dashboard, there's a little kind of console that comes off fairly high so that it doesn't interfere with the middle passenger.
So does it come with bench seating?
No, it's three individual seats, and that's an option. The standard configuration would be a two-passenger front seat with a center console and more traditional kind of arrangement. But it does have pass-through. You can kind of slide from one side to the next. There's not a tunnel there unless you opt for... you know, there's some options for center console.
There's a tunnel option. Yes, we'll put in a little hump there for you.
Yeah, I mean, for additional storage.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
it's functional.
I understand.
It's got storage. Yeah. Right.
So the shifter's up on the dash. That's just to get you into, I assume, park reverse and maybe low. And then you also have your terrain response. That's a separate button or knob somewhere.
Yeah, and it's right up there adjacent to the shifter. All the driving controls are up on that panel up high. The center seat, if you opt for it, folds completely flat, so you can use it as a center console. It's got cup holders, and you know, you can use it as an armrest, kind of like my dad's got a Chevy pickup. Pretty sure is.
I was saying
the seat does this thing.
Yep, but in Ford F-150s, it do the same thing. Yeah,
as I understand it, all three move independently, or at least the two outer ones move independently. I'm not sure if the I imagine the center one may be fixed for space reasons. So the 90, the short wheelbase, can be configured as a 5-passenger or a 6-passenger. So 3 and 3 or 2 and 3.
Wow.
The 110 is available the same way, but is also available with a third row of two seats. So you can have a 5, 6, 8, 7. Yeah. Up to 7. Yeah. Up to 8 with 3, 3, and 2.
3, 3, 2.
Yep. You know, 110.
That's impressive.
The rear seats are actually pretty manageable in the, you know, in the third row as well. They have a really tall back and a fairly low hip point. So they're probably still made for short-term trips with adults, perfectly fine with kids. They do fold flat. Second row folds flat. They had multiple configurations, fold and tumble, fold flat. And I believe, if I remember correctly, they can be taken out completely.
Wow.
In the second row.
Can you get a sheet of plywood in the back?
Not quite wide enough for a sheet of plywood. Not a four-footer. A little narrower in the back than that. But, yes, you could get sheet goods in there flat.
Yeah, and you could, or you could take all the seats out and sleep in the back.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so the you know, with the third row folding into the floor, if you take all the seating out, it's you know, there would be storage beneath there if you didn't have the third row. If you did not have a third row and folded the second row flat, you could sleep on top of it. You could do a, you know, mattress on top of it, or another camping configuration. Hmm. Most of the interiors had leather trim, but they did have some kind of an entry level cloth interior with, I always pronounce this wrong, probably the Kvadrat, the woven wool and recycled pop bottle.
Right.
Kind of material.
Mm-hmm.
And they've actually developed a newer version that I believe they said had three times the abrasion resistance of the current material that they're using in the Velar, and I think the new Evoque uses it as well. So they've designed it to be a, you know, a much tougher material. It's soft to the touch, but it's got a ton of abrasion resistance. And they also had some other combinations that had part leather, part cloth. A little unclear at this point what versions we're going to have available to us, but I believe the full cloth version and definitely, you know, a couple versions of leather, premium leather and standard leather.
Can you hose it out?
So this is what's interesting. There's an option for a rubber floor covering in place of carpet.
Ooh.
Not clear whether that's hose outable or not. Jerry managed to disappear. That was his term. He managed to disappear before we got a chance to ask him about the interior. There is still a little bit of a lip at the door sills that would prevent it from probably draining properly. And it didn't look like those came off easily for drainage. Can definitely be swept out pretty easily. You know, dried mud, caked mud, and things like that can easily be kind of knocked out. But it's not clear at this point whether it'd be hosed out. Without leaving water in strange corners.
Right. I'm sure there are drain plugs.
The electronics appear to be really, really well isolated. There was, with no console running down the center, everything presumably either runs inside a body cavity or up through the roof. It's got a high-speed Ethernet communications backbone for component communication within the car. 100 megabit per second communications backbone.
Thanks.
And it's got a, you know, that doubles as a basically as a rolling Wi-Fi connection. It's got an integrated SIM connection, and they said it's always connected, which could be interesting, I guess, if anyone's ever come out to the dead Land Rover.
That's for over-the-air updates, so they can they can then push updates into over-the-airs. And actually, there was some, we just had a story last month, they talked about this, where they partner with somebody to do SOTA, which I think is software over-the-air, claim that they'll be able to reduce warranty claims and fix things faster, sooner. I'm, of course, worried about the security of it, but we'll not worry about that just now.
Yeah, that's what they said. It was, you know, the vehicle would always be up to date. You wouldn't have to return to the dealer just for a software update or, you know, minor fixes like that, at least electronic ones. So yeah, the system would always be on, you know, available to receive communication or send.
Do you know, does it have one battery or two?
Did not see. And they didn't talk about that at all. Curious, I presume just one.
Is the battery under the driver's seat?
Did not. No, most likely not. I know. Not enough seat height there.
And I assume they got rid of there's no more CD players, right?
God, no.
They always took up a lot of space, that's all. And I assume the heated capability, heated seats all around, heated steering wheel, windscreen.
Yeah, presumably. I mean, everything has it now from Discovery Sport on up. So I'm assuming, heated. At least the first two rows of seating and steering wheel, for sure. At least as cold weather package options, which will probably be most of the vehicles we get.
Right.
Wheel and tire package were interesting. I did not see, although I've seen reports, I have not seen any vehicles wearing 18-inch wheels, but supposedly other outlets have reported that the base wheel will be an 18. I don't expect we're going to see that at all. The 19-inch wheel is what I understand will be our base model alloy. There is a white steel wheel. The white steel wheels that were floating around out there, those are legitimate factory white steel wheels. And the ones I saw appeared to be 19-inch. So those should work on the standard brake package that we're going to get. Otherwise, it's going to be 20 and 22-inch alloys. They're basically running a 32-inch rolling diameter. 275, 55 are 20s on one vehicle. And I think those were Goodyear Duratec, and I saw 285, 45, 22 on one of them, more of a street tire. So those both work out to 32-inch diameter, give or take.
And the spare is a full-size spare hanging off the back, correct?
It is, yes. On whatever wheel is on the rest of the vehicle. So five of a kind, all the way around tire and wheel.
Does it come with a tire cover, or is it exposed?
Everything we saw, it was exposed. There's nothing preventing you from covering it. You know, there's no lighting or license plates or anything on there that would prevent you from covering it, though. I imagine the dealers will be back in the business of selling spare tire covers.
Right. I guess it has all the modern safety things that folks expect, lane departure and brake park assist or whatever those things are. Okay.
Yeah. I imagine park assist, lane departure, all those technology packages will be pretty much standard. They're going to offer the clear sight rear view, which is the roof mounted, basically the rear view mirror mounted on the roof. So that'll be an option, the clear sight rear view.
Which is pretty cool, by the way. I have that now. I have that on my Defender now. I got a new rear view mirror that just wraps around the existing rear view mirror, and it has a camera that strung the line. I'm testing it right now. It's not fully set, but I hung it above the rear door of my 110, and with painter's tape, by the way, and it's still there after months. It's great. I plug it in, and like if I got, it's not too good when you're sitting because there's so much vibration in the truck that you can't see anything, but which is fine. But if you're moving, it kind of balances itself out. And if I've had anything in the back, I'm carrying something, that thing's great because it's turning and you can see. There's nothing obstructing your view of vision. It's really nice.
Absolutely. Yep. So they're also going to have the ground sight or the clear sight ground view, which is the invisible bonnet kind of technology that they previewed about 3 or 4 years ago at this point. So you'll be able to basically get a view of what's immediately in front of you on the screen through cameras. And then there'll also be a 3D surround camera option. So you'll be able to see how close you are to trees in the woods, presumably.
Is that, have you ever used that? Is that helpful? I wonder, you using that in the real world, what is that?
I haven't been able to experience that yet. So I think they debuted that on the Evoque, which I haven't had access to yet. We sent somebody to drive that for the last issue. I have not experienced it. I imagine it's going to migrate through the lineup here pretty quickly, though, as an option. They're going to have a heads-up display, which will be configurable as well. You'll be able to get most of your off-road visibility should come up through the heads-up display.
Is that standard?
That'll be optional.
Okay.
Some of the other options they were talking about. We talked about the air compressor. Similarly, they'll have an onboard water tank with a hose out, be able to store in an interior panel back. They kind of designed that for like the surfer being able to rinse off or come back to the beach and being able to close off or hose off pooch before they bring it inside or whatever. Side ladder we talked about. The side panniers were body colored plastic locking carrier boxes that go on the outside. So some of that will be available in a package. They're going to have, I think the Explorer package has probably been discussed numerous times. That's got the side ladder, the panniers. That'll come on the Goodyear Duratex. This will be the one that's probably the most controversial among traditional Defender owners, but they're going to have an urban package, and that's literally what they're calling it. It'll have the 22-inch wheels. It'll have side tubes, which is how they described the step bars on the side. They described it as premium, but not precious. Still got a ruggedness to it, but that'll be kind of your closest thing to a con design, kind of Chelsea tractor. There'll be standard models of both the 90 and the 110 that I believe we're getting SE, HSE, and then X models. So the SEs would be kind of the more basic trim and fewer options built into them out of the gate. HSE will probably be the bulk of what we see, and that'll probably be your leather interior, sunroof. Most of your technology package will probably be bundled into that. And then the X model, I was a little unclear whether this is only going to be available in 110 or if they're going to have a 90X as well. They're positioning that as kind of the halo car. So that'll be a fully decked, all the premium equipment. That'll have apparently all the X models are going to have a black hood panel, and that firewall panel will also be black. The firewall grate, flow from the hood into the firewall and up the windshield, and I believe over the roof as well. Otherwise, it appears you'll be able to get white roof as an option on other models, or body colored roof if you choose. I believe black roof will probably be available as an option as well. And they're doing silver roofs and other colors on Range Rovers. So I suppose anything's possible at this point. There is a hard separation line between the roof and the rest of the body to accommodate that two-tone. It looks good with white roof on it. It really does.
Does it? You get the Union Jack on there.
Probably, if they're going to follow the mini model at all, there'll be stickers for everything.
I think that's right. So you did. So you saw both the 90 and the 110, and in these in different color configurations.
Yeah, I got to sit in. I believe just the one. No, it was the 90 and the 110. I got to sit in. The 90 has kind of better visibility. The C pillar behind the rear door on the 110s is a fairly thick configuration. It actually does a pretty good job of blocking out some of the visibility. Hmm. No worse than what a 12-year-old would do, though, if they were sitting back there. Empty. Right. There's a big blind spot there. The 90s actually have shorter roof structure there, have better visibility. The rear quarter glass is all flush. The Alpine windows are flush. The rear tailgate glass sits in a frame. It's, as I understand it, it's not entirely flush. It's got a hard frame around the edge from memory.
Is the glass integral, or is the glass part of the tailgate?
Yeah, it's fixed. It's part of a door assembly. You're not going to be able to remove it or it doesn't move or travel or anything.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a rear wiper smack in the center. Kind of takes up the any possibility of that being removable.
If you love Land Rovers, you need Alloy and Grit. Printed 4 times a year, Alloy and Grit is North America's independent Land Rover magazine. Each issue is a celebration of these iconic vehicles, the incredible people who own them, and the amazing places they travel. Find it on the shelves at Barnes & Noble and at Orvis retail stores. Or subscribe at alloyandgrit.com. That's alloyandgrit.com, and is spelled out. Use code PODCAST20, podcast and the number 20, at checkout to receive an additional 20% off any subscription through September 30th, 2019. That's offer code PODCAST20 at alloyandgrit.com.
Back to the different trim levels. So there was reports of being 5 different trim levels, and then you're saying we're going to get 4. Is the X a one-off? Is that like the first year? Because for the first year, don't they usually do an inaugural edition?
So they're going to do a first edition, and it will be an X in the 110. A 90 standard, a 110 standard, which are probably going to be SE models for us. A 90 Pure, which is the first edition 90, and that'll have the cloth sunroof most likely. I'm a little uncertain what the packaging is going to be on that, but the first edition 90, they're going to call the Pure. And then the 110 first edition is the Explorer, and then they'll have a 110X as the Halo model. The Urban, I'm not sure if that's going to be just an option package or if that's going to be a model on its own.
Do you have any pricing?
They didn't have pricing fully figured out, even at the Geneva show or at the Frankfurt show. I'm not sure if they're going to reveal pricing. We've been told to expect parity with the full-size Discovery, more or less. So it'll probably start 50-ish. You know that it's going to be optionable to 6 figures and beyond, I'm sure. Right.
Yes, your $100,000 new Defender, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My guess is that, you know, most of them will sit probably in that same kind of sweet spot that most of the Discoveries are on the lot right now, in the mid-60s to mid-70s, you know, well-optioned. And, you know, the 110, I think they're fully anticipating being the volume model. The 90 is really compelling, though. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're going to do any off-roading, because it's got better brake for angle. You can't really sleep in it. It's a little too short to really get 2 people to sleep in it. The front seats, from what I can tell, don't fold flat. You couldn't really make a platform out of that. You'd have to go rooftop or sleep outside the vehicle. But strictly for off-roading, the 90's got, you know, better architecture and is a really compelling. It'll probably be the more unique one to see. The 110, they expect to be the volume leader for sure.
I would
think
so.
No two ways about it. They expect North America to be their biggest market for the new Defender. So I know there was initial concern that we would never get one, but this one's absolutely been designed with the North American market in mind, and it may be the salvation of the company right now.
It's very possible. That's very possible. Yeah. They should have they should do the roof in the American flag instead of the Union Jack.
It may be coming. You never know.
It wouldn't be a bad idea. So what's the release schedule? Did they give any of that, or do we have to wait for the official announcement?
Since we're in advance of the initial announcement, I'm not even sure. Okay. First quarter is what I'm gathering. I think there'll be some early drive opportunities, maybe in January, early February, and some later drive opportunity. And when I say talking about for media, you know, before we get into them, probably in maybe March. So that's kind of the best estimate, and maybe April, May, start of deliveries for real. That's the best estimate I can make.
Well, that's good, because there have been some discussion that it might not be available until fall of next year. Like they might have talked about
it'll be out either in late first quarter or early second quarter next year as a 2020 model. It'll be a short model year. More options will open up late in the year, probably as 21 models. It'll make its North American debut in Los Angeles in November at the auto show. Definitely be on display in New York in whatever that is, March or April, whatever it is next year. There'll be ample opportunities to see it before it's on the road.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, they certainly do a good job of doing the hype and advertising and marketing it. I'm sure there'll be really cool ads on TV, and there'll be
sure.
It'll make all the magazines and all the podcasts and all the and apparently the movies now.
Judging by the reaction, from the from the 007 buy shot that got out, there's clearly a ton of interest in seeing this thing in the real world, on the street and up close.
I will say, when I saw that, I liked it. I really, really liked it. I was liking things up until this point, and then seeing it in the flesh with all the development camo removed and it has mud on it. It looks good dirty, which to me is the mark of a good Defender or series truck, and it looks good dirty. And I thought, that's a nice looking truck.
They've been teasing us for months now with their durability testing and all that. I have no doubt whatsoever. It's probably going to be the most capable new Land Rover out there. It'll be fun to get one side by side with a well-equipped, well-prepped classic Defender. Get them out in the woods together and see what happens. 3 feet of wading depth, which is considerably more than the original Defender. They're going to have a factory snorkel option. They're calling it a dust-in tank, but it will be waterproof. It's a matter of whatever else you want to get wet up at that level.
Well, it's just like a current one. If you can't breathe, the truck can't. So you're too deep of water then.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the old Defender, new Defender challenge needs to be you put your sandwich on the passenger side floor mat, and you have to eat it when you're done.
No one
wants to eat that soggy sandwich in the old Defender. No, right?
Well, you have to get a sandwich from Big G's up in Maine, and then you got to put it on the seat, and then you got to do all the traveling on the trails through mud, snow, rain, water, ice, and then we'll see if you want to eat it at the end of the day. There's a good comparison. We should do that. That's something we should do.
Absolutely. The thing's going to be watertight. I have no doubt about that.
Oh, of course. Of course, there's no doubt that it's going to be watertight. You'll be able to hold a conversation. You're probably going to have an 800 watt stereo and then still be able to have a conversation.
I know the biggest concern everyone has is size. Well, probably not the size, but it's been one of the things that comes up all the time is, this comparison to these tiny toy cars. And in pictures, you really just don't get a sense of the scale. And I think that's what's going to impress most people when they get up to it and realize the thing's like almost 6 feet tall. It's a hefty, well-built vehicle, fully modern. It's going to be with us for a while. I don't know if it's going to have a 20 or 30 year cycle on this platform. I wouldn't expect it to, but it's going to be around for many years with us. I'm impressed. I saw it in the metal for the first time and was relieved.
Was there perchance an audible gasp of delight when you and your other journalists saw it for the first time? Was there any sound? Was there any clapping, or was everyone quiet?
No one was reviled by it. No one was disgusted by what they saw, which is always a good thing. So all the feedback was really positive from fellow journalists that were there. The one concern I think a couple of the other guys brought up was that this is probably not your Rubicon Trail hard rock kind of truck. It's more of an overlanding kind of truck. If there's a limitation, it's probably there. It's not going to appeal to guys that want to crawl rocks exclusively. It's built for travel, comfortable travel at that, and will do amazing things in amazing places, but it's probably not going to pound rocks like that.
You do with it what you will, and if you don't like it, you don't have to buy it. No one's going to force you to. As has been said about the current Defender, if you wanted one, you would have bought it, and people didn't. And certainly North America excluded, because that was a different issue.
I just had a conversation today with somebody. I think the last 5 years of Defender production, regular Defender production, I think they averaged they went from maybe 16,000 to 25,000. They had a little bit of an upswing at the end when they were calling it quits.
Yeah.
The few years before they announced it was finally coming to an end, it was selling in the upper teens. It's just, which is...
They had one shift during the week. That was it. And they had the capability to do three shifts. So they had one shift.
I'm a little less emotional about the fact that it's not being built in the UK, but I think that's one area where, for nostalgia reasons, they could have maybe tried to make that work. They also have to build it to a cost, and the labor is cheaper where they're building it. Shares architecture with the Discovery, which makes for a little more modular platform.
Also, they did a lot more testing. They tell you they've done all this test, but I suspect that some of that comes from having been on that shared platform that the Defender, or excuse me, the Discovery has been doing a lot of this testing for years in real world situations, and now he can translate it to the Defender, and it will in fact be better off. Then you're probably going to have less of the first model year issues than you would have had they done it fresh, and it would have been the Discovery took the hit, if you will, for that first model issues. I hope so. Anyways, at least when it comes to some of the architecture and the capability, maybe not the fit and finish.
Yeah, well, I think that's it. It's architecturally, it's basically same systems, the same electronic architecture, same mechanical. Obviously, they're sharing engines and drivetrains across pretty much the whole lineup right now. Which, if you look back to the late 80s, a Range Rover, a Defender, and a Discovery were all very, very similar mechanically at that point, and different body configurations for different use cases. And that's kind of where we're at this point. The Discovery, the Range Rover, and Range Rover Sport are all working on this architecture, but they appeal to different markets, different uses, and different budgets. Kind of the way it started out with Defenders and certainly Discovery as well.
If the Defender is built on the Discovery 5 platform, Discovery 4 or 5 platform, what's going to be the difference between the two? Why would I, if I'm coming into this, why would I buy the Defender over buying the Discovery unless I have this nostalgic connection with the Defender?
Well, I think they recognize it, as we all do, as what does this vehicle say about me? And Defender says something much different than the current Discovery does. The Discovery has moved kind of up market as a kind of an in-betweener between a pure utility vehicle and the pure luxury SUV that the Range Rover's become. It comes back to the use case. I think more basic appointments appeal to a more rugged kind of personality. Someone who doesn't want to look at walnut and polished, aluminum and all that probably aren't interested in a Discovery. It is a more iconic shape, even if it's not the same silhouette as the classic Discovery. It still states, its mission as a Discovery, or as a Defender rather, at first glance. Right away, this is a purposeful kind of off-road vehicle. Yeah, on paper, they'll probably do a lot of the same thing. It comes down to some of the options, the way that it'll be available to be configured. It definitely has better geometry on an off-road than a Discovery. Yeah. Not like any other kind of decision, maybe go BMW, a 3, 5, or a 7 series. Is kind of a similar analogy. Someone doesn't want a 5 series because it maybe looks too old, too stodgy, whatever. They certainly don't need 7 series. That's mm-hmm. for different states of life, maybe.
Interesting.
I think mechanically, on paper, they're going to be very similar, but how they're trimmed and what they say about you on some level.
So anything else interesting happened when you were there at the reveal?
Well, while we were there, we got to go to Eastner and drive the new 6-cylinder Ingenium Range Rover Sport. Get to drive those on-road and off-road. It was a fairly short trip, so it was not a full day of off-roading, and it was pretty quick in and out. I've been there a couple times, and this was probably the shortest visit we had there. Also got to look at visit the Jaguar Land Rover Classic Center. Got to see them.
That's pretty cool.
Constructing new, what were they, D-types and XKSSs and the Defender. Oh, man. They had all kinds of stuff there. It was overwhelming. I must have shot a couple hundred pictures while I was there that we'll end up using in the new issue of the magazine.
Sure.
That was a great visit. Dream location, to have facilities like that and the best tools, the best finishes, bright lighting, air conditioning. It was just it's all dream of working on cars in those conditions.
Right. Yeah, you had people who could clean up the grease after you.
I don't know that there was any leaking grease. I don't know. The place was spotless.
I imagine.
We also got to go in the back room where they don't normally let people. Got to see some of the other collection vehicles, some of them which are just reference vehicles that they use for restorations. Others are being stored for other purposes. The Range Rover Sport from Skyfall? I've lost track of which one it was. The one that got beat up in the mountains.
I can't remember which movie.
I can't remember now. My daughter would kill me because I can't remember this. but that was there, the actual film car. They weren't allowed to wash it because the dirt came on from filming. So it's historic dirt. Good trip.
Brian, thanks very much for giving us the opportunity to hear about the preview and give us a preview. I think it's what we're called a preview of the new Defender, and folks probably already have seen it by the time they hear this. I suspect they will have already seen pictures and seen the reveal. Well, thanks, Brian, for sharing. Really appreciate it. It was kind of you. You didn't have to do this. And so I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure to share. It's a relief to finally have the day come.
And I know because you called me shortly after you came back from the UK and you're like, I have all this information. We need to do a special show. And you're like, you can't say anything. I can't say anything.
Yep.
We were allowed you to have an outlet so that the pressure could be released.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. You know, all these leaks keep coming up and I really can't even comment on them with right. a good conscience.
I just thought of this as we're talking about this. Do you know anything why on that development ones, they seem to have this weird protruding thing on the side, like a ledge on the side of the vehicle where the really at the door height, the middle of the door, but you know, bottom of the window. Any idea what that was all about? Was that just to disguise things?
Yeah, they're just trying to keep as much of the surfacing a mystery until the end. I mean, all those add-on sections were really truly just camouflage, disguise. Gotcha. There's no functional purpose for them.
Camo on that stuff is always an interesting thing to me. I know they're trying to confuse people and they cover things up, but they've done a really good job of teasing this over the last several months and getting it out there and building excitement.
You know, they're in a tough position because it's taken so long from the time they announced they were finally going to end Discovery production or Defender production to the time the development cycle, they know they have to get this right. So they're not going to rush the development. And, you know, they need to keep people believing that it's coming legitimately. So they've needed to show progress. They also don't want to reveal it until they're ready. I imagine it's been tough on people internally as well. I got a sense of that when I was there, that they're also relieved to finally be sharing it and being able to reveal it. A couple times recently, I've been at auto shows and had interviews with Jerry, and he's teased me and said, "Oh, I've got it on my phone. Do you want to see it?" And he wouldn't show it to me after he said that. So I think, you know, there's a lot of that internal tension as well to share this with the world. I think everyone's relieved.
Do you have a sense of how much McGovern had in the design of the current version, or maybe even the DC 100? Was he, it's a design house. It's not just one guy, but how much
right.
weight did he have in this? Because I get the personal impression that DC 100 came out, it wasn't liked, and I suspect that Jerry had a heavy hand in that. And then I get the impression, again, this is my personal feeling on this, then the new Defender came out and they said, "Well, Jerry, take a back seat, let someone else take a crack at it."
So Jerry, as you know, the head of design for Land Rover, he oversees the team. So, you know, they do these designs internally. There's even competition within the group. He sets the theme for how this has got to, you know, move forward as a model. He establishes the fact, probably, we can't make a retro model. This has to be forward looking. And so show me your version of the next Defender. For the record, Nick Rogers is the chief designer on the body of, you know, on the styling on this car. Amy Frisella does all the interior design right now for Land Rover. So she worked with Nick to ensure continuity of the design theme. But she did a lot of the, you know, the material color selection and configurations and things like that. But yeah, Nick Rogers is the designer of record on this under Jerry's design leadership, I guess, would be probably the appropriate way to put that. So yeah, we can clear the air. Jerry didn't design this one. He probably didn't design the DC 100 himself either. He, you know, it's a collaborative process and he's a team leader. You know, he gets paid the big bucks to accept the arrows when they're shot at him.
Right. Well, as you said, he sets the direction and the standards and the limits and the minimums that have to be done. As I've been saying the last couple of days, time to get with the times. That's what this is. Exactly. This is a long time coming. And the model, as we all know this, and some people just don't want to realize it, the Defender really stagnated from the time it was built. There was minimal upgrades and changes since then.
So I'll tease just a little bit on the magazine, the fall issue that we're putting together right now. We've done a series of illustrations that fill in the blanks between about the mid-90s and now, with three imaginary generations had the Defender evolved like a normal model with, you know, 7 or 8 year model cycles. You know, they're totally fantastical. They never existed. It's what could have been. And I think had it been, this Defender would have been a lot less shocking to people. Defender had evolved over a series of generations.
Over the last 30 years?
Yeah. Instead of going from an antique to fully modern in one swing.
Yeah, well, maybe 20 years, I guess, since 90,
yeah.
91,
yeah,
really?
Mid-90s. Yeah, there's three generations in between that we've imagined out.
Yeah, look at the Range Rover, look at the Discovery and how it's changed and
exactly.
moved.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that.
And when is the edition of the magazine coming out?
Pushing for end of September.
Well, Brian, once again, thank you very much for coming on, sharing the information about the new Defender and where it came from and how it came from and giving us a preview or preview of what we already know. That's called embargoes. That's the way it is when you have to embargo information. Very, very cool. Thanks again, Brian.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this special edition, New Defender in the Metal. That fourth item that caught my attention was the metal open dash that echoes a Series 2A, not the padded Series 3 or a Defender dash. Please take a few minutes to thank our sponsor, Commonwealth Classics, for their support. Follow them at Instagram. Their account is Commonwealth_Classics, or stop by their shop. And a special thank you to our Patreon subscribers for their continued support. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. We have a page on how to listen and subscribe to the podcast. Go to centersteer.com, that's C-E-N-T-R-E, and click on Listen. It is a sublink under Episodes on the main menu. If you enjoyed this special edition, I ask you to share the podcast with another Land Rover fan. You may now resume your important things.
Excited to see it in the metal for the first time.